Welcome to Conversations on WDRT 91.9 FM. My name is Marcy West, and today I'm honored to host a conversation with Representative Tara Johnson, who was elected to serve in the Wisconsin Assembly in the November 2024 election. Previously, Representative Johnson served as a La Crosse County Board member for 20 years and chair of the board for 9 years. Additional experience included work with the United Way and a variety of community organizations. District 96 includes the southern tier of the city of La Crosse, the towns of Shelby and Greenfield in La Crosse County, and all of Vernon County. So arguably the most beautiful district in the state.
Without doubt.
Yes. Her first term committee assignments include the Committee on Agriculture and the Committee on Health, Aging, and Long-Term Care. So first, congratulations on being elected, and thank you for being here. So after 20 years on a county board, I have to ask, what made you want to run for office?
Good morning, Marcy. Thank you, by the way, for having me here. I think the primary reason for running was to be able to continue the work that I had been doing. It was really rewarding to serve on the La Crosse County Board, to get things done, to feel like I was making a difference in my community. And when the maps changed in this part of the state pretty significantly, and the town of Shelby, where my husband and I live and who I represented for all those years on the county board, we got drawn in, as you described, with Vernon County. It was a great opportunity to continue that work. I'd been represented by Steve Doyle for many, many years. No reason to want that to change, because I think he's been a great representative. So it was really the combination of the maps changing and I guess what that presented as an opportunity to continue the work that I had been doing and felt really proud of and felt was really rewarding work.
Okay, great. I'm so impressed with anybody who's willing to serve in that role. So last year's campaign was really interesting, a very diverse election season and kind of overwhelming for those of us who watched it. What did you learn about this district while you were campaigning?
Yeah, great. I love this question. I feel like I learned a lot. I feel like the values of voters in La Crosse County and Vernon County, exactly the same. You know, they value public education and our schools. They value their neighbors and helping each other out. They have fierce pride in community. They have some also very serious shared concerns about kind of the state of the world, about the state of healthcare, about the state of the economy, and how they're going to get by. But no matter where I knocked on doors, whether it was in, you know, Hillsborough or Lafarge or the town of Shelby or the city of La Crosse, a lot of those issues came across. But what was new for me to learn was the culture, the nature of Vernon County, right? Like it is, you said it before, without doubt, the most beautiful part of this state. The Driftless area is stunningly beautiful and also very vulnerable, right, as a result of that topography. And learning more about Vernon County was a great part of the campaign for me. So the issues around the dams and the, at that time, potential decommissioning of the dams and learning about the watersheds and learning about the Kickapoo Valley Reserve and learning, just getting to know Vernon County was so enjoyable for me and a new things for me to learn at, you know, I'm kind of an old lady. It was good to be able to learn some new things. But again, I would just go back to those shared values, right? Mm-hmm. That even if it was a new part of the district or part of the state for me, Vernon County was newer to me, although I was familiar with it. The values were the same. just, you know, that like the pride and the investment that people want to make in shared structures like public education and safe communities. It was not unique to Vernon County. That's the same in La Crosse County. So I think I went into it thinking, oh, this is going to be so different. And yes, it's beautiful, and the Driftless region is unique, but so much is the same, no matter what part of the 96 I traveled to, no matter where I knocked on doors, those shared values really came through.
Right. Yeah, I agree. And the interdependence on from our most rural townships mm-hmm. to La Crosse and, you know, the whole network of businesses
yes.
and things. Yeah, that's great. So did anybody really stand out, any characters in your campaign? You don't have to name names.
No, that's okay. It's okay. There are just a couple that come to mind. One, Barbara in Westby. She had just gotten home from a dialysis treatment, very frail person, who met her husband at the door, and we talked for a little bit, and she kind of hollered, I want to talk to her, you know, from her recliner in the living room. And definitely weak, like she was, yeah. Obviously nobody ever expects you to come knocking on their door. So first, that's, you know, to be aware that folks are not planning to talk to anybody. But what was top of mind for Barbara in that situation when I knocked on her door was that she was going to vote for women because she was tired of how things were going. And for her, and I think if I remember right, she was like 72 or 73 years old. And, you know, obviously in needing support and, you know, in declining health. And she just was, that was the message that she wanted to get across to me, was that she was going to vote for all women this time. Hmm. It was a great door to knock on. It was great to hear that. But it also reminds me of the other issue that I really want to talk about, because we haven't been talking about it in a while, until last week when the Wisconsin Supreme Court made its ruling on the 1849 law that, like, just door after door, especially folks, primarily women, who are in the, you know, kind of my age range, like the 60 plus women who were answering their doors and talking with me, reproductive freedom was the number one issue. And it seems like a long time ago. You know, it's been a year since I was knocking on doors for the campaign, but that issue was so front of mind at so many doors that I knocked on. And, you know, again, full circle back to last week with the Supreme Court decision, really, really grateful that the Wisconsin Supreme Court made that ruling. And I'm thinking about all the doors that I knocked on where there were folks, and again, primarily women, who were just so angry at the prospect, at all that had eroded over the last many years as it relates to, you know, bodily autonomy, reproductive freedom, women's rights in general.
Yep.
That will, I think, stay with me for a long time, because there were so many doors that I knocked on, and folks that I met at campaign events who were really, really motivated to go and vote to get change at mm-hmm. the state level and at the federal level.
Interesting. Yeah, and I think that kind of spanned generations. I mean,
yes,
there's true. Some young women in my life that couldn't believe that we
had gone
to
that
discuss,
far back. Yeah,
discuss
yeah.
it anymore. So, really interesting. But and we can get into the whole healthcare thing as well later. But so it's fascinating to me, the people who run for elected office and get elected and what they have to go through, you know, kind of, it must have been quite a learning experience. So you're 6 months in now.
Mm-hmm.
What has the first 6 months been like?
Drinking from a fire hose.
Yeah.
Like, very definitely, in the best possible way. But there is a you just get thrown into it, right? You do all the work to get elected. You get elected, and then it's just you start doing the job. There's very little onboarding. There's very little orientation. I mean, some of that in December, we did a little bit of that, just learning the building and learning the, you know, all of the support systems that are there, the Legislative Reference Bureau and the Fiscal Bureau and the, you know, the folks who are in the Capitol and in Madison to help you do your job. But you hire a staff person and you hit the ground running.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, so inauguration was the 6th of January, and that's the first day for staff to start. So they're just now completely thrown in, hitting the ground running. As we're getting sworn in, they're going through orientation to do their job. So it's, you know, kind of crazy. And just a quick aside here, there are now 45 Democrats in the assembly. So we picked up 10 seats, but 23 of the 45 Democrats in the assembly are first term folks. So there were a lot of us drinking from that fire hose and hitting the ground running, and staff who were learning a new job all at the same time. So get sworn in, and January is very much full of maybe an occasional committee hearing for some committees, but a lot of just being a lot of meetings with interest groups who are coming to introduce themselves and tell you who they are and talk about their legislative agendas for the upcoming budget cycle. Lobbyists, citizen lobbyists, like lots and lots of meetings. If you would look at a calendar for a day for any one of us, it would be literally every 30 minutes somebody else coming into the office to talk with us. So lots of scheduling, lots of events. And then February, kind of a lot, some of that also. March, it starts to pick up a little bit more with committee meetings. And then the budget process after the governor has introduced his budget in February, actually, there's a lot of focus on budget. And so for me, it's typical week is Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday in Madison, and then Friday through Monday in district, going to events. I've had a lot of meetings with Vernon County officials. I was appointed to the local emergency committee and served there. Meetings, you know, in district with constituents and with groups. So I say very often, I really, really like Fridays through Mondays, including when there are parades and other things going on, right? Like Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, not so much.
Right, right.
So, and then we've just wrapped up the budget process. I know we're going to talk a little bit more about that, but that's kind of the ramp up, the first 6 months and a typical week for me.
Yeah.
Did that tell you what you wanted?
That works great. And, you know, like you said, getting to know the building, getting to know all of that support system. In my experience, Legislative Fiscal Bureau and the Reference Bureau, some of the smartest people I've ever met. I don't know how they do their jobs, but thank God they're there.
Yes, they are brilliant.
Yeah, so that's great. And I'm sure your county board experience must have helped quite a bit to understand how the process works and who to expect.
It did help for sure. It is also the source of contrast for me, right? Like county board work, you know, people come with different agendas. They come with, you know, varying priorities, but you just always get the work done.
Mm-hmm.
La Crosse County Board was 30 people when I served on it. And, you know, even as the chair, you just are able to get that work done. And it does not always feel that way in Madison.
I bet.
You know, so the experience from the county board was great, very helpful. I appreciate having it. And like I said, it also reminds me of the dysfunction in Madison at times and my hope that it can get better.
Right. So, I mean, you said it, that quite a shift in the Wisconsin political arena, mm-hmm. but the 96th district is typically described as the purple district, mm-hmm. the red symbol for Republicans and blue symbol for Democrats blending together in these hills to make purple. Have you seen signs of bipartisan ideas come through in your first 6 months?
Yes. I think I have to look back a little bit further that we've just been through the budget process.
Yeah.
And we were, you know, I know we're going to talk more about it, but the budget process is very much partisanship on display. I think we, you know, we passed a budget that was, by a lot of standards, bipartisan in that some Democrats and some Republicans voted in both the Assembly and in the State Senate. And that means that there were parts of the budget that appealed to, you know, lots of different perspectives. But the process is very partisan, and the, you know, kind of elbows out and asserting majority status and so forth is a reminder of how partisan that work can be. But in terms of bipartisanship in general, like not just the budget process, yes. I mean, I'm thinking of the health committee that I serve on that was able to pass, we passed a number of bills out of our committee onto the assembly on unanimous votes.
Yeah.
And that's encouraging. There are a couple that come to mind. I don't know if you want me to dive into this now or, you know, save
it for
later.
Well, just if there's anything specific to our district that...
Yeah, I think the there is a bill... So first of all, I should say that really only legislation that is authored by Republicans is any bill has to be authored by a Republican to make it through the process of getting assigned to a committee, out of a committee, to the assembly floor. And there was a Republican-authored piece of legislation on allowing pharmacists to prescribe contraceptives, so basically pills and patches. And the effect, and it passed, I think there was one no vote, but it passed very easily out of committee, went to the assembly, passed out of the assembly. I think the impact from the 96th is the, you know, the rural parts of Vernon County especially are more likely to have a pharmacist on duty somewhere that is accessible for someone who wants contraceptives more so than another provider, a doc or a nurse practitioner or a PA, that finding a pharmacist to get contraception is probably easier in rural parts of the state of Wisconsin, and that means in the 96th. So that was a piece of bipartisan legislation that I was very happy to support and glad to see that, you know, Republican colleagues had authored that, and I think it will have a definitely a positive effect here in the 96th.
I think there has to be things like that, right, where we consider what's happening with rural clinics. And like you said, well, mm-hmm. your health committee probably deals with a lot more of it. But, that's a perfect example. Thinking through our district of where the pharmacists are makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and you know, there's some rural economic development work or legislation that will be especially helpful in Vernon County in particular in the 96th. So a rural creative economy development grant program. There's transition to grazing, a pilot program that that was passed and got some money in it in the budget process. Gail's Law, which is expanding, the program that reduces out-of-pocket costs for breast cancer screenings, and especially for women who are at higher risk of developing breast cancer. That's a significant population in the 96th.
Yeah.
So there, we were able to do some good bipartisan work.
Right. And when we think about local issues, I mean, even the emergency management work, you know, those impacts really do have.
Yeah. No letters after names there.
No letters after names. And as a constituent, I don't care if you're a Democrat or a Republican, we're going to need to address
it. Yeah, I just a quick aside there. I think I've had more pictures taken with Sheriff Roy than anybody else in the 96 since I've taken office. So I'm pretty proud of that.
Yep, he is. And he's very photogenic, so it works out great for all of us. All right, so you are listening to WDRT 91.9 FM, broadcasting from Viroqua, Wisconsin. My name is Marcy West, and you're listening to Conversations, and my guest today is Representative Tara Johnson of Wisconsin's 96th Assembly District. So again, Representative Johnson, so nice to have you here. As I mentioned, you serve on two significant committees, so let's start with one near and dear to my heart, the Agricultural Committee. What's the role of the committee and how do they function? How does the legislative work happen there?
Well, the role of the committee is to take up any legislation that relates to what often gets referred to as DATCAP, the Department of Agriculture and Consumer Protection, or Trade and Consumer Protection. I always forget the T in DATCAP for some reason.
Yeah, trade is hard to, yeah.
Yeah. But there, and I have to say, I'm thrilled with my committee assignments. Like, I really genuinely appreciate my appointment to both the Ag Committee and the Health, Aging, and Long-Term Care Committee, because it taps into my experience, but also is very important, as you said, for the 96th. Have been a little disappointed that we haven't done a lot of work in the Ag Committee. There are some good budget pieces related to agriculture, but I think we have we've had one public hearing in the first 6 months of this term, and ag work typically is pretty bipartisan. It just has not been a very busy committee so far. So I'm hopeful that we will, you know, keep the bipartisan nature of things and maybe get to work and be a little busier when we go back in the fall.
Yeah. Have you heard a lot from the organizations in the district about ag issues?
Yes, mostly around the budget, just because
timing.
We haven't had, timing and, you know, we haven't had, the public hearing that we had, one of the bills that we had two bills, I think, that we discussed. One was on seed potatoes. And there was just a really bad actor in the seed potato world that caused problems around disease in seed potatoes because they really didn't follow the rules. There's, as you know well, agriculture, we need people to be following the rules and being safe with their practices. If you're an organic farm, you don't use, you know, fertilizer or pesticides, right? But in the seed potato business, there was a bad actor that caused, and I can't remember if it was mold or a fungus of some kind, that because they processed those seed potatoes improperly, it put at risk the whole potato industry in the state of Wisconsin. And so we had a public hearing on a piece of legislation that would tighten that up and increase penalties for bad actors, because although potatoes are important here in the 96, but in like central Wisconsin, in the central sands, very, very, very important part of their ag economy. So I can't remember where I was going with this, sorry. But the public hearing, it's bipartisan, right?
Right.
Like everybody. And I think the only time we ever... in that one public hearing, the concern was whether there was enough money and staff to be able to do the enforcement and ramp up the program the way it needed to be. Sometimes funding can be a not bipartisan thing in the legislature, but the potato seed bill was bipartisan.
But that's a really interesting example, because, you know, when when folks would talk to me about, oh, these rules or so-and-so, there's too many rules about this or rules about that. And it's always like, but there was something that triggered that rule. Mm-hmm. So this one bad actor that could have messed up all the other seed potatoes, a rule gets created for one specific issue. Yeah, that's, if everybody just...
Follow the rules.
Yeah. played well together, we'd all be okay. Okay, so yeah, I'm sure more will come up with agriculture now that the budget, because there's a lot in the budget for agriculture, so we can get into that. But then also your Committee on Health, Aging, and Long-Term Care. Mm-hmm. There's so many challenges in that sub, those three things together. What an interesting combo. But what are the priorities or focus for that committee?
Well, it this is one of the busiest committees, and we've had 7 public hearings already, and we've taken up action on 10 different bills and moved them through. So this is lowering healthcare costs, maintaining access to quality healthcare, supporting the healthcare workforce. So supporting the workforce is everything from looking at the Department of Licensing and making sure that, you know, credentials can be transferred easily, that the processes in place for credentialing and licensing don't slow down hiring processes and are easy and accessible for people who are moving from out of state to try to get their credentials here in Wisconsin. So those are some of the issues that we've looked at. Also, as it relates to, access, these are the Medicaid issues that come up consistently. There's, we've been talking about bipartisan stuff. There is bipartisan support for postpartum Medicaid expansion that would give new moms a year of Medicaid support, and we had a lot of bipartisan support for it in committee. It's come through several times in the last few sessions. There is one person blocking that from happening, and that is the Speaker of the Assembly, who just does not want that legislation to pass. So we will continue to fight for that postpartum expansion of Medicaid. I think also funding for rural health care and rural hospitals. We can touch on this in the budget conversation, but the health committee, those are the kinds of issues that the health committee is looking at. And if I have a minute, I want to share just one health committee story that it is just at once absurd and hopeful. So the committee took up in one of our first public hearings a bill to prevent hospitals and providers in hospitals from conducting, get ready for it, Marcy, educational pelvic exams. So this is a piece of legislation that has come through many times through the health committee in the assembly side and on the Senate side, but was not successful getting out of committee. And it came about from a woman who shared her story that she had gone in for another surgery. And while she was under anesthesia, there were medical students, who performed a pelvic exam on her to help them learn how to do that procedure. But she was not notified ahead of time and did not consent to it in advance. And this is, right, like I see your face right now, and I'm just telling the listeners that Marcy has turned many shades of white here. Just the blood is gone from her face. So it is just a horrible practice that had been in place in this state, and I'm sure in other states. And she told her story because she ended up having to go back into the hospital for some some pain and some bleeding that she experienced. And it was like, why is this going on when my procedure was like a laparoscopic for a hernia or something? And came to find out that they had done this pelvic exam without her consent. And so this legislation, we passed it out of committee, and it passed out of the Senate committee and is now going to be law in Wisconsin that you can't do that anymore. And it's just obviously bipartisan, but it's just like, it's 2025, and we are having to pass a law that tells hospitals and their providers that they can't do that. Like, so it's appalling, and it's absolutely absurd that we are talking about this, but we have corrected it, right?
Yeah.
So that was the most shocking for me to, like, be in that public hearing and hear her testimony and the testimony of others who, you know, shared their stories, very personal, very poignant stories, but it led to a change in law in the state, so that's great.
Yeah, but, and it sounds very different than when, you know, you and I have always, or I assume everybody has the experience where your doctor says, can this student be in the room with me? The consent, the lack of consent is what's actually the most shocking.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't mean to shock you with
that. No, that's okay, but again, I mean,
this is why we pass laws, right?
Like, right. And that's why we have representatives that you have to hear those stories firsthand to make a difference. Yeah. So, wow. Well, that sounds like the dichotomy of committees, agriculture and a very busy, you know, high profile committee there. So.
Yeah. Can I just quick jump in with one other? I just want to, on the health committee, I'm sorry. I would be remiss if I didn't talk about the, gender affirming care legislation that we tried to pass in the health committee. So this would be, care for young people who are getting hormone treatments and other therapies to affirm the gender that they believe themselves to be rather than the gender assigned at birth. And it was like 9 or 10 hours of testimony and was very difficult to hear. But the piece that I also want to share is that those hearing, the folks came in, I think the hearing started at like 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and they got there early and they signed up to testify. And the way that the committee chair ran that meeting was to allow everyone who signed up to testify against that legislation got to speak first. And this was a whole array of people, including folks from out of state who had been flown in to testify how this is mutilation and awful things. And those testimonies were all heard in the first 2 or 3 hours of the public hearing. And every transgender kid and their family members and their support people who came to testify in favor of Wisconsin establishing affirming gender care had to wait. And they waited and they waited and they waited. And there was an overflow room and they waited and they waited. And I don't think that hearing ended until about 10 o'clock that night. And the point for me is that we had so many Wisconsinites show up and speak to their personal stories or their child's stories. There were a lot of folks from the faith community who testified. But they had to sit and listen to everybody who had awful things to say about them and sit through that before they were able to give their testimony.
Yeah.
And it was just so, to me, it was so disconcerting and so disappointing to have the process be one that instead of getting to speak on a first come first serve, right? Mm-hmm. Like when you signed up in that order, no, it was manipulated so that those transgender kids and their families had to sit and wait to tell their stories and to be heard. And they had to listen to really some very awful testimony about, you know, people's religious beliefs and all of the reasons that, you know, transgender kids are evil or their families are, you know, doing harm to their kids by seeking gender affirming care. And that part of the process was really disgusting and is something that I hope when, you know, in my world, when Democrats are in the majority and are governing, that those kinds of things won't happen anymore.
Yeah. And that, you know, again, bodily autonomy, medically, all that kind of stuff comes together, I don't know, in a role. That's just such difficult. It's difficult to hear. I'm sure it was especially difficult to sit through. And
they were amazing. Like they were
ready.
Amazing. Yeah.
They were ready.
Yep.
Wow. So we're going to dive into that recently approved budget. This timing is incredible that Wisconsin has a budget for this, my time with you. And I mean, I've been watching the state budget process for over 30 years, and I've seen some strange things happen, but this one was a doozy. A refresher, quick refresher for listeners who may not be political junkies like I am. Wisconsin is on a two-year budget cycle, and so thankfully this only happens every other year. And the state fiscal year is July 1st through June 30th. And each agency, how it develops, each agency proposes a budget. That happened way back in June of last year when Representative Johnson was knocking on doors as a candidate. And those requests get filtered to the budget staff, the governor's staff, compiled by the governor's, which comes in as a proposed budget, as you said, was released in mid-February. Then the legislature works on it, primarily through the Joint Committee on Finance. And that committee held listening sessions throughout the state and heard from thousands of individuals and groups, held hearings to analyze each department request. And then with time ticking to the June 30th deadline, a whirlwind frenzy of negotiating with the governor and assembly and Senate leaders, and boom, voted on in both houses July 2nd and signed and published July 3rd. Did I miss anything?
You did such a good job, Marcy, of capturing a really, not only the historical perspective, but the craziness of the 25-27 budget.
Yeah. Yeah, that was, I just did not, and no vetoes.
There were a few.
Oh, were there?
There were just a handful.
Yeah, comparatively little. So give us some behind the scenes of how elected officials absorb a document like that with that kind of last minute changes and
it was not my best work. I don't think. I mean, it's hard to do it. It's hard to, and you definitely rely on the Legislative Fiscal Bureau staff and the Legislative Reference Bureau staff, who you mentioned a few minutes ago. So the experts, the nonpartisan, apolitical people who work for the state and help sift through everything. It's hard. It's hard to feel confident. And even sitting here, you know, the Monday morning after, I mean, it's not even been a week that we passed that. I'm still looking at notes and I'm still being reminded of what all is in the budget. If I can, I would go upstream just a little bit and say that as a legislator, we do have the opportunity early on to say what is important to us and to share with the governor our priorities. And some of them, for some people, I'm sure, are like specific projects. I tried to get some money for a road project in Ontario in the 96th, and it was a victim of the budget process, as it turned out. But advocating for specific things, but also saying for the 96th, what are the big priorities? And that included special education reimbursement rate for public schools, for K-12, right? Like, that has been a drumbeat that I have been a part of since I started campaigning, that we have to do a better job of funding the K-12 public school system. Vouchers will leave for another day, but that system has to be changed. The voucher system has to be changed. But I was a steady advocate for increasing the reimbursement rate for special education in K-12, in our public K-12 system. Support for aging and disability resource centers, which every county has.
And our awesome service providers.
So I mean, good.
We talked about it with our in a previous interview with the county board chair and administrator.
So good. So good.
And so valuable in every, yes, like you said, every county in the state.
Yes. Yeah, so we wanted more funding for ADRCs. We wanted more money for the LRIP program, the local road improvement program, and then the ARIP, which is the agriculture road improvement program, and then some flood resiliency grants. So those, at the beginning of the process, when I was visiting with the governor, those were some of the priorities.
Awesome. All right, a quick break here, and we'll get back to it. You are listening to WDRT 91.9 FM in Viroqua, Wisconsin. My name is Marcy West, and this is Conversations. My guest today is Representative Tara Johnson of the 96th Assembly District. Okay, a huge document to digest, the budget, but as you said, you got to see some of it, and one of them that I wanted to focus on, got a lot of attention in the last session, was the local aids to municipalities. That mm-hmm. kind of formula got reworked. Again, a bipartisan effort, a variety of groups came yep. together. Did you see some improvements in that out of this budget?
Yeah, I did. I think it was $10 million in local assistance to local governments for upgrades to public safety, the interoperability communication system. So what emergency responders use to communicate to one another. I know in La Crosse County this was a big issue for us to make sure that there were channels that were clear and connected. Every responding entity was able to connect through that interoperability system. So we were able to get, there's $10 million additional money for those interoperability communication systems in the budget, which will help every level of government. So municipalities and their EMS and first responders and the county dispatch systems will all be helped by that.
I'm so glad to hear that because, yeah, we have throughout the years, I mean, the technology has caught up a bit, but there's some areas of our county that just...
Kind of back to the beginning of our conversation, the driftless region, the topography, the nature of the landscape here makes that interoperability challenging but and also very important, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like you need to be able to connect between Hillsborough and Viroqua and
right.
in, you know, La Crosse County, Town of Shelby, Town of Greenfield are some of the last parts of the county to have gotten cell service to have been connected with that new technology. So those dollars will help. And then also just general transportation aid. So about a 3% annual increase for that to municipalities will help just road maintenance and, you know, infrastructure. So those are a couple of big wins, I think, in the local aids
great
category.
Okay. And then the other one that got a lot of attention, childcare and schools, you mentioned the reimbursement rates.
Yeah, the special ed reimbursement rate. Yes. So maybe take these separately. I mentioned that I have been advocating primarily because it's what I believe in, that we should be fully funding. The state needs to step up and fully fund public education, and we haven't done that in decades. But also it's what I heard on Doors. And when you described the budget process and the four public hearings that the Joint Finance Committee folks held, there were over 300 people who came to testify who delivered that same consistent message: increase the reimbursement rate for special education. Because what happens for school districts is they are required to provide special education services. If they don't have sufficient funding, they have to pull it from other parts of their budget. And so every kid in a district suffers, gets less, because the school district budget has to be altered to put sufficient money into special education services. So the consistent message from superintendents, from teachers, from school board members across the state at all of those public hearings to the Joint Finance Committee members was increase special education reimbursement to 60%. When Joint Finance took up the bill a few weeks ago, they went to 32%, I think, 32, maybe we're at 30 now, and Joint Finance bumped it to 32. That message, the drum had been beat, 60%, we need 60%, we need 60%, which the state had promised, you know, decades ago and has never met. So when Joint Finance did that, we were all like, just, that was a gut punch. And one of the things that happened in the last minute, as you described it, the negotiations with the governor, Assembly Republicans, and Senate Republicans, and Senate Democrats, was to bump that to 42% in the first year of the biennium and 45% in the second year. So not to 60, but a significant improvement in special education.
Yeah. Heading in the right direction.
Yes.
Yeah, and I think it was Kickapoo schools that got like statewide attention because they did such a good job of illustrating what an impact that is to our smaller rural schools. So, that as some good news.
Yes, that is good news. And there's also some other increases in the budget. So about a $30 million add-on for school-based mental health services in the K-12 system that will be very, very important. And increased funding for transportation aid, which in a district like the 96th is very important. So this will provide a bump from $400 to $450 annually for each pupil who travels over 12 miles to school. So,
yeah,
big help in, you know, all of the school districts in the 96th, especially in Vernon County. So
right,
that there were definitely some wins in the education budget. I do want to be really clear in saying it is not enough, right? It is just not enough. And this was an important factor for me in deciding to vote yes on the budget. I felt very torn about my vote on the budget and the increase in special education reimbursement and the mental health services, the transportation services increases were a big part of my decision to vote yes for this budget. I think it's important to acknowledge that we did make some gains. We did have some gains and miles to go still.
Yeah.
When it comes to K-12 funding.
Right, right. Yeah. And the negotiations, I'm sure it was I hate the term horse trading, but it's just like the back and forth must have been incredible. But okay, so we'll try and run through a few more that we know of. In the agricultural, mm-hmm, you indicated earlier that there were some positives there, and I think I read a few of those, but if you want to highlight your favorites.
Yeah, thanks. So about $10 million additional for the food security initiative that connects farmers with local food assistance programs, which gets local food into food banks and food pantries and into schools, right? So that direct connection is really an important program and got $10 million bump. And then there's some extra money for nitrogen optimization pilot program, which I think especially folks in your audience are really tuned into the importance of that. So refining the nitrogen application processes and practices. And so there were some wins in the agriculture budget as well. About $200,000 additional dollars for mental health services for farmers and their families. So again, not enough. We wanted more in each of these categories, but increases. And so for the next couple of years, there will be more services available.
Right. And it does tend to take that time and education and all of that kind of awareness. But from the conservation departments and the perspective of getting work done on the ground, you know, that combination of state support, local support, and again, the technology and agriculture really, really seems to help a lot. And I think we touched on transportation a bit with the local aides. But what always comes up with these budget discussions is that, okay, we've got increases here, here, and here. How do we pay for those? And so we did see some revenue increases, or I guess there were tax reductions, but there were fee increases in other places.
Yeah, and I would say, especially in the tax reduction department, the impact on individual families, individual farmers, individual, you know, small business owners, I think that's the place where I will be especially interested in seeing how this budget plays out. So the income tax cuts that were part of the, you know, the agreement, the grand deal that was struck, should be helping about 1.6 million Wisconsinites, including lots of folks in the 96th. There should be a reduction in taxes for about 280,000 seniors in Wisconsin, about $1,000 a person for tax cuts for seniors. And then sales tax reduction and eliminating household energy bill taxes, right? So these are, you know, small pieces of tax savings, some for seniors, some, you know, some for specific populations. But the goal is that Wisconsin households will save nearly $180 million over the biennium in these tax savings. There were not a lot of fees that were increased, some in the DNR area, but I think most of the revenue side or the savings side was in the tax cuts that were proposed.
Yeah, and I've been seeing that stewardship and the hunting and fishing fee discussion and conservation fees are going to be a kind of a separate discussion. So you survived your first budget, and we'll have you back again once it's all digested and implemented and see how we're doing. But with the time we have remaining, what are you looking ahead to in the next floor period, or for when you go back into session? I think that's in September, is that?
Yep, September. I think some of the things that will be important for me are things that we tried to add to the budget and didn't get in the budget. Democrats in the Assembly authored 23 budget amendments, so that took up the majority of our floor session on the, whatever that was, the 2nd of July, when we met starting at 7 o'clock at night. Those amendments were intended to give all of us in the Assembly another chance to do more, you know, to increase the special education reimbursement rate to 60%, and Republicans said no, and they had the votes to defeat that. We had a number of budget amendments in the ag area and in childcare, which we didn't get to talk a lot about today, but there was a significant amount of investment in the childcare initiatives statewide that did make it into the budget, but we offered amendments to increase those. So I will be keeping an eye in the fall on whether or not we can get some additional monies allocated for the things that we think fell short in the budget negotiations. And then I think that there will be some, I'm taking a couple of pieces of legislation to committees, one on the Meet Talent Development Program, which is the initiative to try to get You know, Nordic Meats here in Viroqua is having a hard time finding talent to do the meat processing that they need to do. They are working with the technical colleges and with four-year schools to try to develop a pipeline of talent for that industry. And we're trying to bump up. I'm going to introduce a bill on benefits for veterans and outdoor recreation opportunities for them. Great. So those are a couple of bills I know of in the pipeline for me for the fall.
Yeah, you will not be bored.
No.
So, again, a huge thank you for being here. How would you like people? What's the best way to get a hold of you?
My staff appreciates you, Marcy. Thank you for this. So the office, they can reach out at repjohnson@legis.wisconsin.gov.
Is it rep.johnson?
I didn't say that. Jeez, thanks. rep.johnson@legis.wisconsin.gov. Or they can call us at 608-237-9196.
And I've been very impressed with the outreach. And if folks do want to dive into the budget, there's links on the State Department of Administration website that are very helpful if you're looking for a specific item in the budget or with your favorite department or representative. So with that, I guess we will bring this to a close. We'd love to have you back after you've got a year under your belt and see how things are going. You've been listening to Conversations on WDRT 91.9 FM, and it is recorded at the WDRT studio in Viroqua, Wisconsin. My name is Marcy West, and I'd like to thank our guest, Representative Tara Johnson of Wisconsin's 96th Assembly District, for joining us today. Also, thank you to Steve Brandel for recording and technical assistance. Thank you for listening. You can find recordings of this and other conversations in the WDRT Archives webpage at wdrt.org. Tara, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. It was a blast.